This is KBOO Portland. Up next is Occupy Radio. And we are going to be doing a callback, a little more of our archive work that we've been doing lately. We got some stuff that came from our very early days on the web. And if I'm not mistaken, this may be the first ever Occupy Radio show going to be broadcast for you here in just a few minutes. But first, these important messages, and we'll be right back.
Kick me one of them funky ass beats.
Tune in Thursday, June 18th at 10 p.m. for a special live remote broadcast from What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch. We'll be showcasing the musical and visual artists at this year's festival with interviews, music, and interactions with the producers and participants, exploring what makes this such a uniquely immersive, entertaining, and intimate festival. Again, be sure to tune in at 10 p.m. Thursday, June 18th for our What the Festival broadcast here on KBOO Community Radio. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Attention KBOO members and listeners. The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill four upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KBOO website and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kboocommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KBOO bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th. The candidate statements submitted as part of the nomination packet will be posted to KBOO's website, and candidates will be expected to participate in an interview for broadcast and a Q&A session at the annual meeting. For more information, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com.
Are you bored or unsatisfied with your daily activities? Do you long for a new, exciting experience? If the answer is yes and you're under 21 just like me, then you should consider adding a once-a-week KBOO Youth Collective meeting to your schedule. Side effects will probably include extreme happiness, uncontrollable fits of laughter, a great group of new friends, and yummy snacks. KBOO Youth Collective can cause sudden bouts of inspiration and a yearning to share your words or your inner thoughts with the local community. If joining the collective sounds like a cure for your boredom and lack of an extraordinary after-school activity, then write us at youth@kboo.org or visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, or come into one of our Wednesday meetings for a scare-free, risk-free, and always cost-free trial.
Welcome once again to Occupy Radio. I'm Jimmy Tardy, your host. It's been my pleasure to be the host of Occupy Radio here on KBOO for 3.5 years now. And as I mentioned earlier, we have some archive material. We have the first ever Occupy Radio show, as far as we know, ever recorded. It was hosted on our web stream, which we inherited from the Occupy encampment when KBOO was down there. The project began as an oral history, and it was intended to capture some of the spirit of the time, some of the thinking, and as we're coming up on now the fourth anniversary of what began as hope for a political movement and continues in a variety of ways, and in my humble opinion, and I own this opinion, a social movement. And it does take time. It's been 4 years. There are still a lot of derivatives of all of that energy still at play. And we're seeing a lot of changes in conversation and in facts on the ground around the world from that time. And you'll remember now, 4 years ago, we were just post Arab Spring, and all of the hope and energy and excitement that had infected the world was just beginning to brew here in the United States and led to the manifestation of an issue that I think we all know and are touched by, and that's basically the rendering asunder of the social fabric in this country. And what I saw happening from my perspective was a re-knitting of that social fabric during the Occupy movement, as brief and tumultuous as it was. One thing that it did do, or a couple things that it did do, it brought hope to a lot of people. It brought a lot of people together who otherwise never would have connected. And it shifted the conversation, and we're still trying to sort that out today. We're going to go here in just a moment to an interview that I conducted with some panel members that were born out of the Occupy educational effort. And this is a story that went underreported at the time. We did our best. We're going to bring it back to light because I think it's still in play. It's just something that we're not talking about. And it was a visit made by that panel to one of the schools here in town, talking about the issues of the day, connecting with students, and giving them an opportunity to say what they thought was important. So we're going to go to that now. This is Occupy Radio, and again, this is an archive of what could potentially be the first Occupy Radio recording ever. I'm Jimmy Tardy. This is Occupy Radio. We're going back to the past.
It's about time.
This is Occupy Portland Radio, coming to you from the studios of KBOO, Portland, Oregon. It is indeed about time. Welcome to Occupy Portland Radio. My name is Jimmy Tardy. I will be your host on occasion, along with other members of our team, and I will let them introduce themselves to you as they come on the air, and I will of course be mentioning the contributions that they've made as we move along. This is our first broadcast. We are coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. KBOO has been a significant supporter of Occupy Portland. They have supported us in many different ways. It was very nice to see them at camp for the long duration that they were there and to have the opportunity to use their airwaves to get part of our message out. And it was always very nice to get to know some of the folks at KBOO, and we look forward to continuing that relationship. As this is our first show, let me just give you a brief overview of some of the things that we'll be up to. Our current programs will include music, both local and from other national and international sources. We'll try to keep the content of the musical spots relevant. We'll be doing interviews. Primarily, to begin with, we'll be interviewing local Occupy movement members, occupants, as I like to call them. We'll be touching on
news. We'll touch on local Occupy Portland news, and we'll also have spots that will share some good news that we've discovered from looking about the internet, things that we hear through the grapevine, that type of thing. We'll also include a spot that we call how-tos, where we'll share some of the wisdom that we have run across in a variety of ways with you regarding how to occupy, how to protest, and the like. So without further ado, we're going to start off with a song here. This is Camera Shot the Truth, recorded live, unknown artist at this point in time, available at www.anotherprotestsong.org under the general category.
TV tonight. Well, the camera, it just happened to be rolling at that moment, at that moment. The camera shot the truth, and the camera don't lie. It don't lie to me. Don't lie to me. Camera don't lie to me. Cause I'm just a guy that likes to watch some TV in the evening. But all of a sudden, the channel don't change. Stories. Well, it's so damn simple, and I might as well be staring into space. Some rich guy keeps on laughing in my face, and I can't find what I'm looking for. I can't find what I'm looking for. See, that's not what I'm looking for. Now, what are you looking for? Shapes float through the air like a video game, man. Do you like it when no same shape? Well, they shatter on the ground and they don't make a sound. No, they don't make a sound. The image don't make a sound. Mr. Commentator, tell me a story, I'll regurgitate it later, but please don't give too much information, that might just confuse me. You don't really want to confuse me, do you? Then I might ask too many questions, and you have to come up with an answer that's not necessarily written in your script. You don't want to seem like a dimwit. Anyway, my opinion is incorporate. Oh, I'm just a fella that likes to watch some television in the evening, but all of a sudden the channel don't change. The story's the same, but it's so damn simple, and I might as well be staring into space. That same rich guy keeps on laughing in my face. Can't find what I'm looking for. I can't find what I'm looking for. Say, that's not what I'm looking for. Now, what are you looking for?
That's Camera Shot the Truth, recorded live, obviously. That's available at www.anotherprotestsong.org. And other than that, all I can tell you is that it's underneath the general category. Kind of a cool tune, though. Camera shot the truth. Yeah, that's a really good hope that maybe one day, once upon a time, we will find mainstream media with nothing but the truth to offer us, as opposed to the, other things that they typically offer. Shifting gears a little bit, we'll move into an interview that we conducted with three of the four panel members that were present as part of the Occupy Portland panel team. They traveled to Astor Middle School here in Portland and had an interesting time, and we'll let them tell the rest of the story.
We're joined in the studio today by three of the four panel members who were invited to Astor School to give a to have a discussion with some of the sixth and seventh grade students there from James Clark's class. Joined in the studio by Raya Cooper, Hillary Boyd, and Elmira Rodriguez. Hello, ladies.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hello, Jimmy.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. It's good to see you all again. We're here today to talk about their experience with that panel at Astor School. There was a little bit of controversy, I understand, and we want to have a chance to explain from their viewpoint what they experienced, and we'll also talk a little bit about some of the fallout from that whole episode. Hillary, can you just explain a little bit about the panel that you guys formed and some of the history and that kind of?
Absolutely. The panel was born out of our education committee, which is part of our library from the site. It is really important to us to bring this knowledge and learning out into the community, and we do have a lot of people who are really curious about what we're doing. So we were approached to set up an education panel. So generally we go out with about five people, and we speak to different groups. Generally those groups are educationally based, so usually university students. We've spoken to communication students about our communication, et cetera, all kinds of different things like that. And it's a diverse group of people that all just want to share their knowledge and interest in Occupy and in making the world a better place. And I'd say there are about 15 different panel members, and it kind of rotates around based on who's available and who's interested in speaking to different audiences that want to hear about what's going on.
Sure. So it's a chance to interact a little bit more personally, maybe get a chance to get in depth with some of the subject matter that the Occupy has been addressing. Elmira, I understand that you all were invited to this classroom. Can you share a little bit more about the details of that invitation and how that came about?
All right, so Astor Elementary is my daughter's school, and in the beginning of the occupation, I took her down with me, and she camped with me on several occasions, helped in the kitchen, and then went back to school to explain to her teachers and her friends what she where she had been while she was absent. And she began showing them videos, pictures, just explaining to them what we were doing down there. And then the class began to have daily discussions, and the teacher actually started showing video footage and showing pictures to these students, and they started discussing First Amendment rights and protesting and all of the world issues that, that we're talking about. And one day I went to go pick up my daughter from school, and the teacher approached me and said, we would really love it if you guys and some of the other occupiers could come into the classroom and talk to us a little bit about what you're doing and help educate the students.
And that's Mr. Clark.
Mr. Clark, yeah. And it was just coincidental, about a week before we had actually formed the OP panel. So, and we'd already done maybe five panels by then. And I said, you know, it's really coincidental that you asked me this now. Of course we can come in, and we have this whole team of panelists that could come in. And so he called me the very next day and said, okay, great, we want to do this. Please tell me what day you can come in. And by the way, we've got four other teachers who also want you to speak to their classrooms. So what they decided to do was bring another seventh grade classroom into the room also. So we would do two classrooms at once. And the next meeting was, or the next panel was supposed to be planned. We never, just never got that far. So I told him, of course, we would do it. And we came down.
Okay, so
The panels had been formed and active in the community, and it was serendipitous that Mr. Clark asked you, I'm guessing maybe he was hoping that maybe you would just come in and talk about the Occupy?
Yeah, well, when he asked me to do it, and I explained to him that we had a whole panel of people who were actually doing these, and he goes, yeah, whoever can come, if it's just you or if it's just one other person, it's great. But they wanted any form of communication from us in their classroom. They wanted anybody to come down and just talk about these issues because the students were very involved and very engaged, and they were actually showing enthusiasm to talk about these issues.
Sure. So, Raya, maybe you can just elaborate a little bit on what sort of preparation you guys had done for this particular panel.
I know personally I have a lot of experience with kids. That's why I was really excited to be invited to go to a school. And at our panel meetings, we have the first half usually be about discussing panels in the future. And then the second half of our meetings are preparing ourselves, asking each other different questions, and discussing good, appropriate answers in a way that will really allow the viewer or the community to get the most out of our panel. So, yeah, Amari.
Yeah. So the panels were really born out of communicating with other members in the community who really had no idea about what we wanted. They saw the Occupy movement. They knew that we were protesting, but they really didn't have any idea of what we wanted or what we were protesting for. And they also had a lot of unresolved questions that they had seen, you know, on the media that somebody had died of heroin. Is that true? And is it true that there's only homeless people in encampments? All these things that the media were feeding right. them. So we were realizing that a lot of people held these. And so we wanted a way to get out into the community and actually provide them a space to ask us these questions or give us their criticism or tell us how much they support us or whatever it is they wanted to tell us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think one of the best things about our panels is that they're really audience driven. Mm-hmm. It's mainly Q&A. We're just there to answer questions that people have for us. You know, we don't walk in with an agenda or Kool-Aid for everybody.
Right.
So
I think that was the approach. When we came to do the classroom, we knew these weren't adults, and they weren't going to be asking us a lot of the same questions that previous panels were asking us, like how does our work relate to God and things like this. We really, really were there just to get their perspective on what was happening. We were there to inquire about the things that they wanted to see happen in the world and the issues that they felt needed to be worked on.
Okay. So you walked into the classroom and your intention was to let the kids drive the conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was your first time with a group of this age, and how did they do in that regard?
Awesome! Yeah, very, very impressive. We get to the classroom, and the sixth graders made room for the seventh grade class to come in, and everyone was seated, and Mr. Clark introduced our panel, and we all introduced ourselves and just how we were each connected with the occupation and other political events. And then we stressed that we are not here to shove information into your heads, down your throats. We are here just to learn what you are passionate about. And I phrased the question, the future is undetermined at this point. And I explained to the kids that it belongs to each of you. The future belongs to you young people. So what should we fix first? What's the biggest thing that we need to work on? That's the biggest issue in your life.
Uh-huh. And so what was their response?
I simply wrote down the words that they were saying onto the board. And the very first issue they came up with was racial discrimination. And these are sixth and seventh graders, and it was amazing that they came up with that.
And just to remind everybody, we did not prompt this conversation. We just asked them a question about the things they would like to see changed in the world and then took stack. So after taking stack, there was no input from us on our part. And this was the list that they got.
Just briefly, just to explain, taking stack is where people get a chance to raise their hand and let in this case, you all know that they would like to speak, and then they are given a number, and then they know that they're going to have an opportunity if they wait for their turn.
Absolutely.
And the rest of the list was quite amazing. They came up with economy, bank fees, price hikes. They mentioned that our environment needs a lot of help. Abuse, against women, global warming, the poverty and malnutrition that are prevalent in our country, our corrupt government. Someone mentioned foreclosures, and at this point we stopped and paused and said, how many of you are affected by foreclosures?
Or have ever experienced
one. Or have ever experienced. And right. I'd say probably 30 to 40% of the students raised their hands, and then we inquired, like, how were you, young lady in the front row, like, how were you affected? And at that point, they shared some of their stories.
Mm-hmm. It was really moving to hear these kids talking about it. The young lady whose house had been foreclosed on had moved up to Portland from another state because their house got foreclosed and her mom couldn't find work. And it was something that had deeply affected her on a personal level. And it was really cool to ask these questions and hear these general categories of feedback, and then ask the kids to elaborate on it and tell us more about what that meant to them. And they always were really able to do that. It wasn't like this buzzword that was in their head that didn't mean anything to them. They had a personal connection to it.
So this sounds as if it could have been fairly long into the period. This could have, you know, I'm guessing this could have been a half an hour into your presentation, or what
we
was
had
the timing?
About 15 minutes before that we were told that the conversation was something that made the school board uncomfortable. I think that was the language. Mm-hmm.
So you covered this much ground in 15 minutes.
And right. A little bit more, too. We talked about war, and that was another subject that the kids brought up. And again, we asked kids about their experiences with war. And there was a very strong identification of that affecting people's lives.
We asked how many of them had relatives or friends who were in a war, and over half, if not 60 or 70% of them, raised their hands. And we said, tell us more. Like, how are you affected by this? One boy, this is really the story that sticks with me. One boy said that his dad had been gone away in the war for over 3 years, and he hadn't seen his dad in 3 years. And when he does see his dad, it's like he doesn't have a dad because his father had been changed so much by the war. And this is a sixth grader. Like, and the fact that so many of these kids raised their hand, and truly there are so many kids in this country and so many people in our wars, so many people are affected.
And these kids were really eager to share their stories and to engage in this conversation. We didn't have to pull it out of them. There was no empty, awkward silence. They were raising their hands and really the ones controlling the conversation and making it so successful.
So. Well, that's...
There were a couple other stories. Yeah, just very... the topic kind of morphed into post-traumatic stress syndrome disorder, and a lot of the kids had family members that were really affected by that.
Right. It was amazing how many of these children were willing to share their stories. You have to remember that they're amongst their peers, and probably the first time they're sharing any of these really personal stories in a group of peers, and it was probably a big moment for a lot of them. So the fact that they could do it.
And they were so respectful of each other and everything, that no one was interrupting people, and it was pretty remarkable. I was so impressed. That was my big thing that I felt walking away from that, was just like, wow, these kids are so on it. They're intelligent and savvy and connected, and they understand how they are a player in the world. And that was where we wanted to get, was what can you do to help make the world a better place, you know, to bring that down to a local level and inspire them to get active in the world, like in the world, to whatever they think is important.
Right. So it sounds like this was kind of a very adult conversation that you were having with these young ones.
Yeah. we didn't really have a plan on what we were going to talk about. We wanted it to be very open. So before our discussion started, us panelists met together and said, how should we frame this? And we came up with a plan to start on the global level and say, what are these big issues that we're all dealing with? And then our plan, before we were averted, was to then ask, what can we do in our country? What are the issues in our state? How about Portland?
What about our school?
How about your own family?
Related to their school. I know a lot of them have been talking about budget cuts to outdoor school. They only got 3 days this year for outdoor school, and plus no field study, no anything, just hiking basically and picking up rocks, which is very different than the outdoor school that we had 10 years ago, where they would take a whole year and head out to the beach and stay in cabins and do field study and collect samples and do pH water balances and all these things.
A whole year?
Or a whole week. A whole week. Okay. Not a whole year, a whole week.
I'm like, wow, I want to go to that outdoor school.
Definitely got some cuts.
A lot of my daughter's friends had been talking about the fact that they don't have a music program, the fact that they only have PE once a week instead of three times a week, which it was last year, the fact that their Spanish program had been cut to 1 day a week, and they've got a lot of grievances just within their own school. So my objective was to go in there and get these students to understand, okay, we can identify our grievances, and then we do have some power to get them addressed within our school community, because this is a very active school with active parents, and if the kids started actually being the one to organize themselves and then go home and ask their parents for support, they could potentially get some funding back for some of these programs that they have lost.
Well, that doesn't sound like a very dangerous idea.
No.
That's where it gets interesting.
Yeah. So what happened next?
A female staffer came into the room and talked to Mr. Clark. And then Mr. Clark came up and told Elmira first, because they already had a connection and a relationship.
Sure.
And then he announced to the class that the school board was not comfortable with us having that conversation and that it would need to end. Is that right?
It was obvious that the class had been discussing these issues previous. And he asked why he said, do you remember why these protesters are assembling in parks and having encampments? And they remembered our First Amendment right to peacefully assemble.
I think he was basically reminding them of what the First Amendment right was. And so he could see how that First Amendment right was being shut down in that moment. Because
then he asked the kid, the youth, are we not peacefully assembling here now? And everyone agreed, yes, we are peacefully assembling here now, talking about our world. And then he said, well, I've just been notified that the school district, or I'm not sure exactly who he said then.
I think he said school board.
Yeah, I think he said school board. He said, the school board is uncomfortable with us having this discussion, and our guests need to leave immediately.
That's amazing that in the course of 15 minutes, the school board can be informed that you're having this discussion and come to a decision about how they feel about having this discussion. But so how did things unfold from there?
The students were visibly upset. We were having this conversation and everyone was very engaged. People were waiting and respectfully conversing with the whole group. And they were upset. And I remember thinking, like, wow, this is historic right now. And I said, why do you think they might feel threatened for us being here? And all the kids sat up and they all raised their hands and I want to answer.
I think at that point, about 90% of the classroom had their hands up and was just jumping at the edge of the seats to answer the question.
Mm-hmm. And one young lady that we call on right in the front said,
and she did speak with a small voice, and unfortunately we don't remember her exact words, but she did say that somebody might be afraid that we would plant the seeds of change in their minds.
And she did use the term advocate for resisting police.
She said that we didn't want that, as if we were going to tell them to not listen to the police. Which we hadn't even talked about the police up until that point. We didn't even talk about them.
Which is interesting considering your response, because a young man did say, I'm so mad I want to punch a cop. To which Raya said...
Well, we were leaving. It was right after the seventh grade class. It was very quick. Everything was very fast. The seventh grade class cleared out, and this kid said, I'm going to punch a cop. And I stopped everyone, and I said, like, the basis of our movement is nonviolence. And punching a cop doesn't change anything or solve anything. And nonviolence is our goal, and it's the way to the goal. And I think they all were very impacted, and everyone was like, it was like shell shock. We were all just like, what just happened?
I was feeling very, very displaced in my country, feeling like my freedoms to go out there and speak in a place where I was invited. I've just been taken away from people that I couldn't see, couldn't talk to, couldn't ask why, just being told, no, you can't be here. And again, one of the reasons that... I really love this country is because we have freedom of speech, and you know, especially in a classroom where my daughter is and a lot of her other friends who I've had conversations while we're at home about the state of, you know, school funding and everything else like that, and that we just couldn't be allowed to have that conversation. And they didn't even wait for the end of the conversation. They shut it down immediately in front of the students.
Sure.
Which is especially controversial considering other school groups and other materials that are allowed in our schools these days.
Right. A few months back, Junior Achievements came into the classroom, which is a program. They've got a warehouse space out in Beaverton where they've got a very miniature mall set up, basically. And about a month before the students take a field trip out to Junior Achievements, they're all given jobs. My daughter was elected to be the CEO of the coffee shop. And for about a month, they're trained how to run these jobs and how to write checks and how to take orders out to people when they're ordered. You know, really indoctrinating them in business. And so after the month, they all head out there and they have a fully functioning city or a strip mall for a day where they all have a job to play. No parental permission slip was ever sent to me. Nothing of the sort was ever sent to me saying, hey, we're going to bring this material into our classroom and we're going to teach these children how to finance and how to be employees, right? Which I was deeply opposed to. But after they had already come into the classroom, showed them all this great stuff, how they're going to take an awesome field trip and make money and make decisions. I mean, at that point, she was a way into it, and I couldn't tell her, sorry, you can't be a part of it. But had they given me the room to say, no, I don't want my daughter being a part of this before they presented it to the classroom, that would have been very helpful to me.
Right. Which is why it was so interesting that we were immediately cut off in a current events class, and we then learned after we left the school that there is a policy in the Portland School District that grants teachers the complete right to bring in any sort of material from the community, especially on controversial subjects, to provide a whole learning experience to the kids. So when we were asked to leave, it was really, they were going back on their own words.
Right. So, it sounds to me, just from what you've mentioned here, that, the school board seems to be all right with, encouraging and supporting the notion of a consumer society.
Yeah. Or allowing the military to recruit in schools.
Right.
Yeah. They did just pass to have, people who are against recruiting it, like, right, as a counterpoint in schools, which I think is
that's
a good
step in the right direction.
Kind of,
it's about time.
Right.
I mean, we're at like the economic draft point, so we might do a little bit more.
Sure. And, go ahead.
Well, I'd say in the Occupy movement, we realize that there are many things that are underfunded, including schools, right, and educating these kids about current events that relate to their very existence. Our schools are crumbling. School meals are becoming less and less nutritious, if they ever were, really. School materials, reading materials, are created by
ExxonMobil
and for-profit textbook companies. Thank you, Texas.
And whatever the... We were just... The port shut down. Who are they? The port shut down.
Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, Goldman Sachs also writes children's educational material.
Right.
And so after we left the school, we all were very, like, blown away. And I called my friend Alex, who's also in the information sector of this Occupy Portland, and I just let him know what happened. Hey, we were just invited to Astor School, and then we're having a discussion with these kids, and then we were asked to leave and end the discussion immediately. And so he contacted our PR team, and within 5 hours, we released a statement about this. We had a press release. We contacted the Teachers Association, which I called the head of the Teachers Association to let her know what just happened in one of the schools, and to let her know, and also to commemorate the teachers of Portland who are doing a really great job. And it was amazing how bright these kids were. So we contacted them, and other multiple news sources had contacted us later this afternoon. So,
Yeah, that was a really great experience because it showed how our flat organization, now that we are becoming accustomed to functioning in a non-hierarchical situation, is actually beginning to function very well and efficiently. And so it was great. Legal contacted us and told us what we needed to get to them. PR put out a statement. We had all our media contacts and we're on the phone with you guys and a bunch of other people, and it was awesome. And that was really exciting for me and impressive for me. It made me feel like we're really moving in a direction where we can be really successful and effective.
So it sounds as if the Occupy may, in more ways than one, be getting its act together. And your response, I mean, it sounds as if you guys pressed all the right buttons. So what was the, what's the end result? Where do things stand as of today?
Well, I think the immediate response from about the articles that were written about this Astor School panel being asked to leave were very interesting, because some people would say, like, how could you let these dirty hippies in your schools? And then the alternate question is, how could you let the military recruit in your schools? And, like, it immediately put our education system in the foreground, which is where it should be.
Indeed. Sure. And when I think about the military coming to schools to recruit, just it gives me such an ugly feeling, because we're broke because of war. We're not broke because of any of our other expenses. We're broke because over 50% of our tax money goes to war. We've wrote a blank check to the oil companies, basically. And it's an icky situation, and everyone else is taking the brunt and blame from the main news media about why we have no money. And we have no money because we are spending all of our money on a war that is not serving any of the normal people in this country. Yeah. So that's why we're broke. We're not broke because of education. Education gets no money anyway.
Yeah, we didn't overspend. Rar. We didn't overspend on textbooks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Or art programs, or music programs, or PE, or, you know, renovating schools. Like, that is not our cost problem. And, you know, these issues really do affect the quality of life for these young people, as well as the development of their minds.
Sure,
you know, when I hear about Spanish getting cut, everyone else in the world has a leg up on the United States because they all teach their kids English. And so their kids are all bilingual, and their brains work better,
right,
and they're smart. Like, there's just, it's a known fact, and we're not adjusting our education system to help us be competitive in a highly competitive world.
So I recently read an OregonLive.com article on this this event, and in the article, one of the Portland Public School System spokesmen made a comment as far as revisiting, maybe having you guys come back into the school, something like that. His final comment was that the door may still be open for that. And so today, we're recording this on December 22nd of 2011. Where does the situation stand as of today?
Yeah. As the teachers in the Portland Public Schools heard of this incident, they were, on the whole, appalled. And a group of teachers drafted a letter in response of their frustration with the fact that a teacher was doing good things in inviting people, like inviting people who are involved in a movement that's global into a classroom that they had been discussing already throughout the whole term. And the letter, it's just voicing these teachers' total frustration with how hard they work, with how little support they get and little pay. And I believe over 200 teachers have signed this proposal, and there thus far has been zero response from the Portland School District.
Well, just to be clear, this is a petition to remind the Portland Public School District that teachers do not have to ask before inviting people into their classrooms. Their job is to disseminate a large quantity of information, the most broad information that they can to these children so that they can form their minds, and that he was effectively doing his job. And so it's a petition to remind the Portland Public School District.
One of the points in the petition was, if this was during the civil rights movement or women's suffrage movement, would Martin Luther King be asked to leave the classroom? Would these women who are peaceful trying to get their rights asked to leave the classroom? Like, yeah.
Well, I think, and the point was that they probably would have been asked to leave the classroom. These are controversial figures, and in their time, were not accepted, and their ideas were not welcomed. They were making social change, but I guess the point that he's making is we need to look back on our history. There have been times back in the past where we have pushed out these historical figures and not allowed them to speak, and we are trying to not recreate those same systems of oppression here, and right. We need to learn from our history.
Yeah. And the teachers also expressed that, you know, their ability to give a good education to these students is being corrupted and polluted by the ExxonMobil textbooks, by the fact that one of the only things that Congress has been able to agree on this fall is to make sure that Schwann's frozen pizza stays on school lunch menus to fight Michelle Obama's push to make school lunches more healthy. There's also advertising going on in schools. I don't know if that's actually happening in Oregon, but it's advertising for sugary foods, basically subsidizing obesity. And so there's a lot of things that are welcomed into our classrooms, and nobody's upset about that. They're upset that we came and talked to them about how to make the world a better place. You know, this is silly.
And one thing that I'm most excited about is the response from the parents of the children who were actually in that Q&A session. Right. When I go up to school to pick up my children and I talk to the other parents, they are frustrated. Nobody seems like they would have been opposed to us being in there. They didn't have a problem with us being in there. And they themselves have drafted several letters to the principal and expressed their frustration in his decision, wherever, you know, whatever influence he had to make that decision. But they are frustrated. And so they're also joining in with the teachers union to draft several more proposals to the Portland Public School District to ensure the rights of teachers to be able to bring speakers into their classroom without facing consequences from that.
And the rights of students, you know, the rights of students to get an unbiased education you can't really do an unbiased education, but an open-minded and well-rounded education.
To learn and explore the world around them.
And from the way it sounds, just to express their concerns. It sounds as if that's pretty much all that happened.
This is about them from here on out.
Right.
We have to work together. We have to allow these kids to come up with the solutions, because us adults are like, we haven't come up with much yet.
Right.
And so the world belongs to the youth, and we need to nurture them in a way that they will be prepared for what's coming to them, because it is a scary world out there. And if we are raising sheltered youth, then that's not beneficial for their well-being.
Right.
And just realizing that we're coming into an age where we really have to fight for our basic human rights, and one of those being education. And if we can help these children see that nobody's going to give them a well-rounded education. Nobody's going to give them their music programs back. And if they want them, they're going to have to learn how to organize themselves. You know, and it's better if we get in there at a very early age and teach them that they do have the power. It's not even teaching them, it's showing them that, you know, within your own self, you have the power just as an American citizen to have your grievances addressed and to fight for the change that you want to see.
Sure. So I have... Go ahead.
I read an article today that show the most recent census of Oregon, or I think all over the country, really. There's more than half of the youth are, excuse me, one in four Oregon youth are food insecure. And that's thousands and thousands of children who don't have the resources that they need to be healthy. And our schools, kids are in school all day and taught how to be healthy, but you can scratch that part. I don't know. It just is amazing that these kids don't get what they need. And we're spending money on many things that we shouldn't be spending money on. We need to set our priorities straight. We need to focus on the kids and their health and their food and their daily activities to prepare them for their world.
And critical thinking, you know, like, it is not beneficial for people to not be able to see a variety of mindsets and viewpoints about issues. You know, even if you don't, even if you pick one that is something that you agree with more strongly, to be able to see things from multiple points of view is really valuable in the way that we function. And that's something that really isn't encouraged in our education system until you're in college. And even then, not that much. So, you know, showing a variety of viewpoints is really valuable, but shoving consumerism and being an employee down children's throats mm-hmm. and forcing that dogma, that corporate American dogma on these children is, I mean, we're shaping their minds.
Right now they're being, well, there's plenty of advertising in our schools, and unfortunately it's there because schools have to resort to that kind of funding because they're not being funded. And so when Coca-Cola or whoever wants to come in and say, hey, we'll give you some money if we can have our vending machine in your lunchroom.
Right. Or if you
Elmira,
just,
you're very exposed to that.
Or if you just look at the Box Tops programs, right? Every year, the kids come home with a paper, twice a year, I believe it is, asking parents to go out and buy products with the Box Tops coupons on the tops. And we're talking about things like cake mixes and Betty Crockers and cookies and all these things. So what happens is the children take those Box Tops back to school, and then they send them off to Nabisco or whatever company that produces that stuff, and then they return a check to them. It's like 30 cents on the dollar for every Box Top that they get back. And that money is supposed to go to the PTA to fund whatever the PTA does, right? So that's being pushed on children, right? These high fructose corn syrup, high in sugar, high in calorie foods are being pushed on them, but yet we're not allowed to say, hey, what do you guys want to see changed in the world? We're just really trying to show a broad spectrum of all the contradiction that's present in the Portland Public School District today, what's allowed, what's not, and what should we really be spending our time educating these children on?
Right. So I've got one final question for the three of you. Right, you were mentioning about the young man and who was so frustrated that he said he wanted to punch a cop. And I'm really glad that you seized the moment and, you know, pointed out to him that that is not an appropriate action, and that definitely the Occupy movement and us personally would not condone something like that. But my question is, what would you ask him to do? How would he best use his frustration, and maybe even especially toward the powers that be, maybe even specifically toward the police?
I think the first thing is to find your voice. I think that empowering our youth to find their voice and feel powerful and worthy in the things that they say is so important. So the first thing that I would recommend to that kid would be to write about his experience and to share that, and to share that with his community and with his parents and with his teacher and with his principal and with the school board and the PTA and whoever else he thinks should know about that experience. I think that we are not particularly good in American culture at dealing with hardship and difficulty when it happens, and that we tend to have this more aggressive response. I feel wronged, so I'm going to wrong you back. And I think that finding ways to use your words or other modes of self-expression to fully express what you're feeling negates the need for any kind of violent outburst. And so I think that helping the youth find their voice is a really great way to really curtail violence in our culture.
Right. Especially if they can find ways to express that anger that translates into action, which finds solutions to a lot of these problems or these things that they're upset with.
Mm-hmm. I think the truly amazing part of this Occupy movement is that it involves so many people, and everyone is passionate about different things. And I would encourage everybody and this young man and all of the students in the classrooms and our schools and everyone, find out what you're passionate about. What are you most affected by? What can you change in your world so that you are living in a more caring place that you can thrive in? So any of these issues, find your voice, find your take on things, and work. Let's work together and talk about it, and talk about how we are all influenced and affected by these things. And let's come up with solutions. Let's work with these kids and nurture these children so that they have their voice and they can speak their mind, which is a right, a human right, to be able to speak your mind. And let's work on things with them, and let's allow kids to come up with these solutions and enact change.
From the mouths of babes, we'll hopefully find not only the truth, but maybe the solution. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you, ladies, personally, for being part of this Occupy movement locally. I've really enjoyed getting to know you all and becoming such fast friends so quickly. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for reaching out to the community and being such stellar examples of what we're trying to do collectively. And thank you for just sharing your story and your passion and your energy. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'd also like to mention, to provide a whole view of this story, there was one more panel member, a male who is not present right now, who was there observing all of this too. So sure. Just so that everyone knows, there was one man. So
yes, right.
And thank you for having us and letting us share this. And it's exciting, and we can. It's nice to have news about Occupy that's not about battling police officers or defending a camp. It's about, we're moving on to bigger issues and bigger actions now.
Right. And I would feel remiss if I also didn't send out a thank you to Mr. James Clark, the teacher there at Astor, for his efforts to further educate our children and provide them fresh and timely opportunities to learn about the world around them and what they can do to be part of changing it.
He's a truly brave man.
Yeah. He seemed like a great teacher. We only got to know him for 20 minutes, but
yeah,
I was very impressed with how he handled everything. So.
A lot less than you thought you were going to be able.
Yeah, I've been working with him throughout the year, and I've really taken to him, and I love the way he approaches his classroom, and the things that he teaches these children are amazing. And we've had a very good relationship this past year, but something that really endeared me to him was when he came into the room right before he told us that we were going to be shut down. He locked arms with me. And that was really amazing to me, just the show of solidarity that, you know, I have to do something. I'm very sorry, but I am standing in solidarity with you. So that was amazing. So thank you, James Clark.
Yeah, thank you. Very nice.
And there's also one other teacher there, and other teachers in that school are eager to have us return. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
you say the date.
Yeah. We're eager too.
Astor, you just let us know.
Yeah.
Well, and anyone else.
I look forward to hearing your report from how that goes. I'm Jimmy Tardy. We're here at the studios of KBOO in Portland. I've been joined by Elmira Rodriguez, Hillary Boyd, Raya Cooper, part of the Occupy Portland outreach panel, who were at the Astor Middle School on December 7th. And I'd also like to thank Joe Lito, our engineer, for this segment. And we look forward to talking with you ladies again and getting an update on how this progresses. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Peace on Earth.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Food Wars 8, hosted by Clinton Street Theater. This annual music and comedy festival is also a food drive and will feature entertainment from August in Blue, Bad Habit, Tragedy, Boomer, Belinda Carroll, and more. Again, that's Food Wars 8, Sunday, June 21st at 5 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.